So we will continue our study of mental factors. So second group of mental factors is called unwholesome or akusala. You are familiar with the word akusala or unwholesome, and so they are bad mental factors. And these are to facilitate referring to these mental factors later. They are grouped like unwholesome universals, greed triad, and so on. The groups are not given these names in the manual, but our teachers, especially in Myanmar, gave these names to these mental factors, three or two or four, because when we make ourselves familiar with the details of the mental factors and their combination with different types of consciousness, then we have to use some short terms. Instead of saying greed, wrongview, and conceit, we will just say greed triad, something like that. Now, the first group is unwholesome universals. That means these four will arise with every type of akusala consciousness, every one of 12 unwholesome consciousness. And the first of them is moha or delusion. Now, this moha is synonym for avidya. You may be familiar with the word avidya if you have read the dependent origination. So, avidya means not knowing, and moha means delusion, and so on. So, they mean the same thing. And sometimes moha is translated as ignorance. So ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, ignorance of the dependent origination, and so on. And this is actually not knowing. So it is a mental blindness, not knowing things correctly, and maybe knowing things incorrectly also. And this is one of the three unwholesome roots you have met when you studied the unwholesome types of consciousness. Now, among the 12 unwholesome types of consciousness, the first 8 are accompanied by or rooted in, let's say, lobha, attachment. And the 2 are rooted in dosa, and the last 2 are rooted in moha. Now, I did not tell you at that time that moha is common to all 12 types of unwholesome consciousness. Although the first 8 are called rooted in attachment, actually they are rooted in delusion also. And the 2 that are called rooted in ill will are also rooted in delusion. Only the last 2 are rooted in delusion only. So now you see that moha or delusion is the unwholesome universal mental factor. That means moha arises with every type of unwholesome consciousness. The next one is ahirika, or shamelessness, and the next one, anuttapa, fearlessness of wrongdoing. Now, shamelessness means shamelessness in doing misconduct, bodily misconduct, or verbal misconduct, or mental misconduct. So this is, so when you do something wrong, you are not ashamed to do it. So that shamelessness is one mental factor when you do something wrong or when you have an unwholesome consciousness. And fearlessness of wrongdoing means you are not afraid of doing wrong things. You are not afraid of doing misconduct. So that is fearlessness. Shamelessness is compared to a village pig that is not disgusted of excrement. And fearlessness is compared to a firefly that runs into the fire. Now you may have seen the fireflies that just run into the flame. They are not afraid of the flame. So in the same way, shamelessness or ahirika is not ashamed of doing misconduct, and anotaba or fearlessness is not afraid of doing misconduct. And the last one of the four is in Pali, uddhaccha, and it is translated as restlessness, or sometimes it is translated as agitation. So it is disquietness, like water whipped up by the wind. So when there is no wind, water is quiet, but when there is a wind, then the water becomes shaky. So that is compared to uddhaccha, or restlessness or agitation. And it is also compared to a banner that flutters in the wind. Now, you have met restlessness when you study the unwholesome types of consciousness. I think it was the last of the 12. So uddhaccha is shaking above the object. I told you this when I talk about the akusala chetas. So it is mind shaking above the object, and so it is not stuck to the object. You do not see the object clearly when there is uddhaccha in the mind. So that is called restlessness or agitation. And these four accompany every type of unwholesome consciousness. The next subgroup is named greed triad, or in Pali, lobha tika. So greed triad are greed, wrong view, and conceit, or in Pali, lobha, ditthi, and mana. Now greed here covers desire, longing, attachment, and clinging, craving, and so on. And this lobha is actually attachment to the objects. Now, you come across some object, especially a desirable object, and you are attached to it. Now, that is lobha arising in your mind. And this lobha is compared to a kind of, what do you call that? Sticky substance that comes out of a tree. Now, there are some trees that have a sticky substance come out of the tree, like gum. And when you touch that sticky substance, then your hand is stuck to it. It is difficult to take the hand from that sticky substance. Now, it is described in the text that there is a monkey, and he sees this sticky substance in the sun, and so it is shining. So he put his one hand on the sticky substance, and it is stuck, and he couldn't remove it. Then he put the other hand, and then both hands are stuck. Then he put his one foot, and then other foot. He's all four stuck to this substance. And then he tried to free himself, putting his face to the substance, and so he is stuck to it with all these limbs. So lobha is like that. So when we have lobha, we are stuck to this object. If I like this, then my mind is stuck to this object. I cannot take my mind away from it. That is why lova is compared to that sticky substance that comes out of the trees. So in this modern times, you may say, what do you call that? Glue stick. Right? In the United States, there is a glue stick. You can use as a glue or gum. So this is loba. So loba includes all shades of greed, like longing, attachment, clinging, craving. And the next one is ditti, wrong view. Now the Pali word ditti means just view. But if it is used alone, it almost always means wrong view. If we want to say right view, we use sammāditti. We use the word sammā in front of it, and so sammāditti means right view. And if we want to be sure, then we may use miccāditti for wrong view. So when there is the word miccā in front of it, then it is wrong view. And when there is no other word but just ditti, wrong view is also meant. So ditti is wrong view, and wrong view is seeing things wrongly. Seeing things wrongly means taking wrong things to be true. Now, Buddha taught that things are impermanent, but if we think things are permanent, then this is one wrong view. And Buddha said there is no soul, no self, and if we think there is a self or soul, this is also wrong view. And if we think that there is no karma or no karma, results of karma, whatever you do is just doing, and things happen without any cause and so on. So these shades of views are called wrong view. And the third one is mana, conceit, or pride, or haughtiness. So we often take pride in ourselves, in our nation, in our country, and so on. So when there is mana in our mind, we think I, this is I. So mana is compared to a banner. It is always on top, so it wants to be on top always, and it is like flying in the air. So that is called mana or conceit. So these three arise with the eight types of unwholesome consciousness accompanied by greed or lobha. So we will come to the details later. Next is the group of four. So we say hatred quartet. Dosa cetuga. Now these four arise with two types of consciousness accompanied by dosa, the green ones. Now the first of one is hatred or dosa. Here also dosa means aversion, ill will, anger, irritation, annoyance, all these things are included in dosa or hatred here. And also fear is included in dosa. So the anger is aggressive anger, and fear is the passive anger. No, not getting angry, but your mind is not as it was before, and so the fear is also included in dosa. So when you are afraid of something, when you fear something, then one of the two types of consciousness accompanied by ill will arises in your mind. The next one is envy or issa. It is jealous of other people's success. If other people are rich, then we don't like it. If other people are more educated than ourselves, we don't like it. Something like that. So that is called issa, and it is translated as envy. So envy takes the other people's success as object. So we see other people's success and then we are jealous of them. That is issa. The next one is machariya, avarice. Now machariya is a little difficult to understand. Mostly we think that machariya is stinginess. But stinginess is attachment to one's own property. Say, I am stingy and I don't want to part with it. I don't want to give anything to anybody because I am stingy. That is stinginess. But machariya is not stinginess. Machariya is intolerance of one's possessions being common with others. For example, this is my watch. If somebody makes use of this, I don't like it. I cannot bear sharing this with other people. That is what is called machariya, and it is translated as avarice. That is why it is included in these four that are common to two types of consciousness accompanied by ill will. Machariya is not concomitant with eight types of consciousness rooted in lobha. So machariya arises only with two types of consciousness rooted in dosa or ill will. So machariya has this characteristic, that is intolerance of one's possessions being common with others. And the last one is called kukkucha, or remorse. Here remorse means two things. We regret because we did something wrong in the past. We did something wrong and then we are remorseful for having done wrong. Sometimes we did not do something good and then we regret for not having done the good thing. That is also called remorse. So the remorse has two objects: something wrong that we did in the past and something good that we did not do in the past. So we can have the remorseful feeling regarding both of these actions. These four arise with the two types of consciousness accompanied by ill will. And then we have the diet, sloth diet, that means sloth and torpor. Sloth is defined as sluggishness or dullness of mind, that means dullness of consciousness. And torpor is the sluggishness of the chetasikas or mental states. So sloth is the dullness of consciousness and torpor is dullness of mental factors. And these two arise always together because consciousness and mental states always arise together, and so these two also arise always together. And when we are sleepy, we say, I am inflicted by sloth and torpor, or sloth and torpor has come to me, and say, I'm under their influence. So when we feel sleepy, just we say sloth and torpor, or in Pali, tina medha. Now, in some schools of thought, Buddhist schools of thought, medha is taken to be medha. They said there are two kinds of medha, one mental and one material. But that is rejected in Theravada Buddhism. So in Theravada Buddhism, metta is always mental and not material. I will not go into details about this. Now the last one is doubt vichikicca. Here doubt means indecision. Now doubt and wrong view are different. With regard to wrong view, you have made some decision. Say this is permanent. This is self or soul. You have made a decision and that is wrong. But doubt is not like that. Doubt is indecision. You cannot decide between these two. You do not know whether one is right or the other is right. You are at the crossroads and do not know which road to take. So that is a kind of doubt. Doubt is the translation of the Pali word vichikicca. And vichikicca is explained as vi and chikicca. And chikicca means cure, a cure of knowledge, and vi means difficult or devoid of. Say devoid of the cure of knowledge, devoid of cure of wisdom. That means when, so long as you are in doubt, you cannot come to understanding, you cannot come to a knowledge, a true knowledge of the thing. So it is called vichikicca or doubt. And here doubt means doubt about the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, doubt about the dependent origination, doubt about Four Noble Truths and so on. And when you practice meditation, doubt is a great hindrance. Because when doubt comes, you cannot carry on meditating. So you have to eliminate it, you have to deal with it efficiently. When you are in the real practice, you just be mindful of it, or you make mental notes of it to get rid of it. So now we've finished the 14 unwholesome mental factors, beginning with moha and so on. Now, how many of them have you met? You have met with lobha, you have met with deity, you have met with mana, not yet, and you have met with dosa, asa machriya, kokuja, no, and tina mida, maybe not, and doubt, yes. So there are five hindrances, but regarding the meditation, and all five hindrances are from among these unwholesome mental factors. Now, the first of the mental hindrances is sensual desire, so that is lobha, and the second, ill will, or dosa, and then sloth and tobo, and then uddhaja and kukkuja, so that means restlessness and remorse, and the last is doubt, vichikicca. So the mental hindrances that we have to overcome in order to get concentration and see the true nature of things are all included in these unwholesome mental states. That is why, so long as we are not able to subdue the mental hindrances, we cannot get concentration. Because unwholesome mental states and wholesome mental states cannot coexist. When there are unwholesome mental factors in our mind, there can be no wholesome mental factors. And samadhi or concentration is, regarding the meditation, a wholesome mental state. So wholesome mental state will arise and stay only when there are no unwholesome mental states in our mind. But if we have mental hindrances in our mind, then the concentration which is here, a wholesome mental state cannot arise. So that is why the subduing of mental hindrances is very important in the practice of meditation. So now we have these 14 mental factors that are called akusala or unwholesome. So as the name implies, they will associate themselves only with the unwholesome types of consciousness. Now the next group is called beautiful mental factors, sobhana chetasikas, and there are 25 of them. So we have more beautiful mental factors than unwholesome mental factors. And the first one of them is faith or saddha. Now, saddha or faith is not blind faith. So it is faith founded upon understanding. This is having faith after coming to a firm decision. So faith in the Buddha, faith in the Dhamma, and so on. Now the second one is mindfulness. You are all familiar with mindfulness, sati. Now Pali word sati comes from a root called sar, and that means to remember. But sati is not just remembering. Sati is actually the full awareness of the object. Sometimes we use sati for remembering. But in the practice of satipatthana meditation, sati does not mean remembering. Sati means full awareness of the object, and that we call mindfulness. And mindfulness, if it is to be mindfulness, must be thoroughgoing. The characteristic of mindfulness is described as not floating on the surface. So when you practice mindfulness, then your mindfulness must go deep into the object. And the commentaries say that it is not floating on the surface like the dry fruit that floats on the surface. Or we may say a ball on the surface of the water will go with the waves, but mindfulness must be not like that. It must be like a rock that sinks into the water. So when you practice mindfulness, your mind must, as it were, sink into the object. So your mind should be fully engaged with the object. So that is what mindfulness means. So there can be no superficiality regarding mindfulness. And next is shame, and the next is fear of wrong. These two are the opposite of the ones among the 14 unwholesome mental factors. And these two are described by the Buddha as the guardians of the world. Now, so long as these two qualities are in the minds of people, the world will be a good place to live in. So they protect the world from falling into widespread immorality. Now, when you have shame, that means shame in doing unwholesome deeds, shame in doing misconduct, then you will not do it. If you have fear of the consequences of doing misconduct, then you will not do it. So shame and fear are two good qualities that protect the world from becoming immoral. That is why Buddha described them as guardians of the world. And the next one is non-greed, alobha. Sometimes this is translated as absence of greed. but that is not good, because it is a positive state actually, and not absence of greed. It is a positive state or a mental factor that is not attached to anything. So it is translated as non-greed here. Now, when a drop of water falls on a lotus leaf, it will not stick to the leaf, it will fall off the leaf. So in the same way, when there is aloba, then a person is not attached to anything. So it is not just absence of greed, but it is non-greed. And the next one is non-hatred. Again, it is not the absence of hatred, but it is a positive state which is non-hatred. It can be developed taking the all beings as object, and then it is called mitta or loving kindness. So adosa or non-hatred and loving kindness can be synonymous, but not all non-hatred is loving kindness. Only when we take all beings as object and wish for their welfare can it become loving kindness. At other times, when we pay homage to the Buddha, when we offer things to the Sangha or to the Buddha, there is non-hatred in our minds, but that non-hatred is not loving-kindness. So loving-kindness is only when we take all beings as object and wish for their welfare, wish for their happiness. So non-greed, non-hatred. Now the next one is neutrality of mind. Now the Pali name for this is Tatra Majjhatata. Majja means middle. Majjhatata means to be in the middle. And Tatra means in those mental concomitants. So, to be in the middle among those mental concomitants. And it is translated as neutrality of mind. Now, this is one mental state that keeps other mental states do their own function. Now, it is compared to a charioteer driving a chariot drawn by, say, four horses or six horses. When the horses are running properly, the charioteer has not to worry about the running of the carriage, and so the charioteer just look on when the horses are running properly. So in the same way, when the other mental states are functioning, doing their own function properly, this neutrality of mind just look on. This neutrality of mind is often called upekkha. Whenever you see the word upekkha, please be careful. It can mean indifference feeling, or it can mean this mental factor, neutrality of mind, or tatra majjhatata. You are familiar with the four Brahma viharas, the noble abidings, metta, karuna, mudita, and the last one, upekkha, right? So that upekkha is not feeling upekkha. That upekkha is this tatra majjhatata upekkha. So when you develop upekkha, which is one of the four divine abidings, you try to be impartial towards all beings. You do not try to wish happiness for beings. You do not try to sympathize with them, you do not try to be happy with them, but you just look on without being affected by the condition of the beings, either they are prospering or they are suffering. That is what we call upekkha among the four divine abidings. And it is also translated as equanimity. Next come the tears, tranquility of mental body, tranquility of consciousness. In the Pali, there is the word kaya, kaya pasadhi. Kaya normally means the physical body, but actually kaya means just a group or a body, and so here it means not the physical body but mental body. Mental body really means these mental factors. So the kaya pasadhi means tranquility of chetasikas, mental factors, and citta pasadhi means tranquility of consciousness. When there are defilements such as restlessness and remorse or worry, there is stress in the mind, so the mind is not tranquil at that time. So when the mind is free from restlessness and worry, mind is said to be tranquil or peaceful. So the tranquility of the chetasikas is called tranquility of mental body, and tranquility of consciousness is called citta pasadhi in Pali, tranquility of consciousness. And the next group is lightness of mental body and lightness of consciousness. When you have sloth and torpor, your mental state, your mental factors are not light. They are kind of heavy. And your mind or your consciousness is also not light. But when the consciousness is free from sloth and torpor, then there is no heaviness in the consciousness or in the mental factors. And so these two are called lightness of mental body and lightness of consciousness. And it is also explained that when there is lightness of mental body and lightness of consciousness, then you don't have many moments of bhavanga between active thought moments. Now, there are types of consciousness called bhavanga. Bhavanga is translated as life continuum. They are the inactive thought moments. Now, all through our lives, the inactive thought moments and active thought moments arise one after another. So there are inactive thought moments, and then there are active thought moments, and then again inactive thought moments, and so on. Inactive thought moments always intervene between the two sets of active thought moments. And those inactive moments can be many, or they can be just a few. So when the active thought moments are intervened by just a few inactive thought moments, then mind is said to be light. Consciousness and mental factors are said to be light. Then that happens when mind is free from sleepiness or sloth and torpor, and also at other times. Now the next group is malleability of mental body and of consciousness. Now this is difficult word. The Pali word, what is the Pali word for malleability? Mududa. Now, the meaning of the word mudu means soft. So, we may translate softness of mental body and softness of consciousness. Now, softness here means it is not rigid. So, so you can manage it. When it is rigid, it is difficult to manage. So it is manageability. When there is wrong view and when there is conceit, mind is said to be rigid. But these types of mental factors do not arise together with wrong view or conceit, and so they are free from wrong view and conceit, which create rigidity. Since they are free from rigidity, they are said to be soft. So, softness of mental body and softness of consciousness. The next one is wieldiness of mental body, wieldiness of consciousness. Now, wieldiness means you can do anything you like with that thing. When the clay is wet and soft, then you can make this clay into any shape you like. So that is what is called the wieldiness of mental body and wieldiness of consciousness. There are hindrances like sensual desire, hate, and so on. So when these mental hindrances are in the mind, mind is difficult to manage. So they are said to be unwieldy. So when mind is free from these mental hindrances, the mind is said to be wieldy. So that means you can manage the mind in the way you like. And so these are the two mental factors, wieldiness of mental body and wieldiness of consciousness. And the next pair is proficiency of mental body and proficiency of consciousness. In Pali, what pagunyata means proficiency. It is opposed to unhealthiness of the mental body and unhealthiness of consciousness. Now, when there is lack of faith and so on, mind cannot take what it likes to take, and so the proficiency is missing there. So when there is no lack of faith in the mind is proficient in taking the things that are beneficial to it. And the last is rectitude or straightness of mental body and rectitude of consciousness. Now, it is opposed to hypocrisy and fraudulence. When there is hypocrisy or fraudulence, mind is said to be crooked. But these mental factors are free from the hypocrisy or fraudulence, and so they are said to be straight. So straightness of mental body and straightness of consciousness. These 19 types of consciousness are called beautiful universals. Now you remember the beautiful types of consciousness. How many beautiful types of consciousness are there? You remember? Except the non-beautiful, the rest are beautiful. So, 89 minus 30, 69. So, 69 types of consciousness are called beautiful. You take out the chart and you see the first 30 are non-beautiful, right? And the rest are beautiful. The first 30 means 12 unwholesome and 18 rootless consciousness. So these 30 are collectively called non-beautiful. So since these are non-beautiful, the others are beautiful. Now these 19 mental factors are common to all these types of consciousness. So that means let us take the first consciousness from among the sense sphere, wholesome consciousness, the first one. So when that first one arises, all these 19 mental factors will arise with it. The same with all other beautiful types of consciousness. Therefore, these 19 are called beautiful universals, or in Pali, Sobhana Sadharana. Now the next three are called abstinences. And in Pali they are called virati, abstaining from something or refraining from something. So they are called abstinences, and there are three of them, and they are right speech, right action, and right livelihood. If you are familiar with the eight factors of path, you may notice these three among those eight: right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So these three are among the eight factors of path. But here, since they are called abstinences, you must understand that right speech means actually abstention from wrong speech. Not just talking right. It is actually abstention from wrong speech. The same with right action. Right action here means abstention from wrong action. Action means bodily action. And right livelihood means abstention from wrong livelihood. So these three, although the names are right speech, right action, right livelihood, they really mean not just speaking right, not just acting right, but abstention from wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. And the abstention is explained in the commentary as of three kinds. There are three kinds of abstentions. The first one is called abstention on occasion. That means when you meet with an occasion to do something wrong, you refrain from doing that. And that is called abstention on occasion. And the second one is abstention by precepts. That means you have taken the precepts, and so when the occasion for doing wrong arises, you refrain from it. And the third one is absolute abstention. And that absolute abstention arises with path consciousness. So when path consciousness arises, there is this absolute abstention. That means it destroys the propensity to do wrong speech or wrong action or wrong livelihood. Now, the first one, abstention on occasion. The commentary gives us a story for that. There is a family in a village, and the mother is sick with some disease. And the physician told them that in order to cure the disease, the fresh flesh of a rabbit is needed. A raw flesh of a rabbit is needed. Now, there were two brothers. So the older brother ask the younger brother to go to the forest and catch a rabbit. So he went out to the forest, and he saw a rabbit eating grass. But when the rabbit saw the man, the rabbit ran away. But as the rabbit ran away, it was caught in a creeper, and so it could not run away, and it was making like ki 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 and so on. So he picked it up and then thought to himself, now I have got medicine for my mother, I will make medicine with the flesh of this rabbit. But then he thought, it would not be proper for me to kill a being simply because I want to cure the disease of my mother. So thinking this way, he just let it go. And he went back. Then his brother asked him whether he had got the rabbit, and he told the story. So when the elder brother heard this, he scolded his younger brother. But the younger brother went to the mother and then made the utterance of truth. He made utterance of truth in this way: ever since I came of age, I know of what is right and wrong. I have never taken the life of a living being. So by this utterance of truth, may my mother be cured. And it is said that the disease of his mother was cured. So here, this man refrained from killing the rabbit on occasion. But now, the occasion for, or the chance for killing the rabbit has come to him, but he refrains from it. So, refraining from or abstaining from doing wrong when some opportunity arises is called abstention on occasion. So he has an occasion to kill the rabbit, but he did not. And abstention on precepts, for this there is another story. Again, there's a village, and one day a farmer took precepts from a well-known monk in the village. So after taking the precepts, he went to the fields to plow, and then his oxen ran away, and so he went in search of the oxen, and he got into a forest. So in the forest, he was caught by a python, a snake. So the snake coiled around him, but he had in his hand an axe. So the first thing he thought was, I will kill the snake with this axe. So three times he thought that way. But later he thought, it would not be proper for me to break the precept that I have taken from such a holy person. So I will give up my life. And he threw the axe away. By the power of his moral precepts, his moral sila, the python released him and went its way. So, in this story, he abstains from killing the snake because he has taken the precepts. So, this is another kind of abstention. Abstention by or through taking precepts. The last one is absolute abstention. That means abstention achieved at the moment of enlightenment. Now, at the moment of enlightenment, you all know that the path consciousness arises, and that path consciousness eradicates all mental defilements. So, when it eradicates mental defilements, it eradicates all disposition for doing what is wrong. So that is the abstention that lasts forever. So that is called absolute abstention. So there are three kinds of abstentions or abstinences. Each one of them can be of three. So here we have Samma Vacha, right speech, Samma Kammata, right action, and Samma Ajiva, right livelihood. Since they are abstentions, what is meant here is abstention from wrong speech, abstention from wrong action, and abstention from wrong livelihood. Now, in the discourses, suttas, Buddha mentioned five traits that a disciple should not follow. And it is trading in or dealing in poisons, dealing in intoxicants, dealing in weapons, dealing in human beings, that means slaves and so on, and dealing in animals for slaughter. So these five are called wrong livelihood. So a disciple of the Buddha should abstain from dealing in these five things. So when he abstains from dealing in these five things and make his livelihood correctly, then he is said to be practicing right livelihood. But here also, right livelihood means abstention from these five kinds of wrong livelihood. Now, the next group is limitless ones, and they are compassion, karuna, and appreciative joy, mudita. Now, they are called limitless because they must take the object that is limitless. When you practice compassion, you have to take all beings as object, no limit. That is why they are called limitless. So limitless means limitless in the range of object. And when you practice appreciative joy also, you have to take all beings as object. Now, what is compassion? Compassion is a desire to remove suffering from those who are suffering. Now, when you see someone suffering, you want to remove that suffering from that being. And that desire to remove suffering from those who are suffering is called compassion. So it has the characteristic of promoting the removal of suffering in others. When you practice compassion, first you may practice compassion to one person or one being, two beings and so on, but ultimately you must reach all beings. So may all beings be free from affliction or something like that. May all beings be free from suffering. So when you repeat this and really meaning this, then you are practicing compassion. And it is important that when you practice compassion, you just stop at compassion and don't go into sorrow or anger. Now that is very important. Now sometimes people transcend or people pass compassion and go into violence. Now there are people who have compassion for animals being used as tests in medical laboratories. And then they would attack the people who are working there, or they might even throw a bomb at them, and so their compassion turns to anger. So that is not compassion. Now they have come into anger. So when you practice compassion, you have to see to it that it does not change into anger. Or sometimes you are sorry with the person who is suffering, and when you are sorry with him, then you have domanasa, you have a kind of ill will, and so you step over into the akusala. So it is very important that we must be careful when we practice compassion. We must not get into anger or sorrow, but we must just stop just at compassion and wish that they be free from suffering. The second is appreciative joy. That means when other peoples are prosperous, when other peoples are in success, you are happy. You do not feel jealousy. So that is appreciative joy or mudita. And mudita also should be practiced to all beings without exception, and so it is also called limitless. There must be no limit in the objects of the mudita or appreciative joy. So when you practice mudita, you say, may they not fall away from this prosperity, or something like that. Now there are four divine abidings, four Brahma Viharas, but here only two are mentioned. That is because mitta is included in non-hatred, and upekha is included in neutrality of mind. So actually there are four Brahma Viharas, but the other two are included in the mental factors, non-hatred and neutrality of mind. So these four can be practiced to become Brahma Viharas or divine abidings, and also they can be not Brahma abidings. So when you are paying homage to the Buddha, there is non-hatred in your mind, but you are not practicing loving kindness. And when you are paying homage to the Buddha, there is the neutrality of mind, but that is not upekha as the Brahma Vihara. So in order to practice Brahma Vihara or noble abiding, you have to take the beings as object, beings, limitless beings as object, and then send thoughts of loving kindness and so on to all these beings. So here the two are called limitless, but in other books the four are called limitless ones. Now we come to the last one, and that is wisdom faculty, panyendriya. Actually, panyendriya is amoha, non-delusion, opposite of moha. Moha is not knowing, and so panyendriya is knowing, understanding the true nature of things. And since it exercises authority in its own field, it is called indriya, or faculty. And this panyendriya, or wisdom faculty, has the characteristic of penetrating things according to their intrinsic nature. That means penetrating the true nature of things, understanding that things are impermanent and so on. And it is compared to a light. So when there is wisdom, then we see things as they really are. When there is no wisdom, we are like in the dark. So it is the opposite of moha. So altogether we get 52 chetasikas. Some common to both unwholesome and beautiful, some common to akusala only or beautiful only. And these chetasikas will come into combination with the types of consciousness we have studied. Now we will have to find out which chetasikas go with which types of consciousness, and also which types of consciousness go with which types of chetasikas. That means, suppose we will take, say, vitaka, and then we will find out how many types of consciousness arise with vitaka. And then we will take the first unwholesome citta, and then we will find out how many chetasikas arise with that type of consciousness. So there are two modes of combination. So we will study them tomorrow. Now we have come to the end of the 52 chetasikas, and these are mental states, and these are interesting things. And there is a way of understanding them by four aspects. Our teachers of old taught us that each one of these should be understood according to the four aspects. That means the characteristic of each one, function of each one, manifestation of each one, and proximate cause of each one. They are given in the manual. So you may take those from the manual, and they will be very interesting. Okay, we'll continue.